It's 6:38 here on News Radio 92.3. By the way, I just had a mind blip. Suddenly I forgot that we're going to have Alex on. So at 7:38, we're going to talk about the Trump derangement syndrome bill. And so not right now, unfortunately. But Alex Andrade is our state representative for District 2. And he joins us now by phone. Right, am I getting closer on the right era for vintage for the music?
Oh, no, the song you just played. We don't have to go into details about the song you just played.
Oh, I agree.
Yeah, that song you just played is what I had in mind. Yeah.
Okay, excellent. I heard what you played. I heard what Walker played with you last week, and you know, I'm trusting John to be my guide on what is actually old school rap, not you know retired school rap like I would advocate for. So a lot of stuff going on in the legislature. I don't know which one's the most important, but let's start with sort of the most recent. The legislature began this year by overriding some of the vetoes that the governor instituted last year, and by basically saying, you know, we have the power to override vetoes, though, right? And it's kind of set itself up to be a little bit of a showdown between the governor and the legislature. And then he kind of came back and now has said, I don't like it. This is not good. You shouldn't do this. I figured you might have a thought.
Governor Santis, when he terms out in 2 years, is welcome to run for the Florida legislature if he thinks he can do it better.
Wow. All right. I mean, you know, fair. Okay, good. Everybody's got their role, right? Everybody's got their power. And by the way, you know, sometimes people perceive conflict as being some kind of a meltdown of the system. This is a system that is designed to manage the resolution of conflict and to create pathways in order to solve problems where people don't agree. Otherwise, we wouldn't need governments. It's not a constitutional crisis when people are exercising their powers, and it's not a state constitutional crisis when you guys pass a budget, he line item vetoes, and you override the veto. I mean, that's actually how the system works, right?
No, exactly. The separation of powers is built, it's baked into our American fabric. I think it was, Justice Antonin Scalia who gave a great speech to Congress one time about how that's not dysfunction, that's how the tension's how we're supposed to be operating. That's when we're operating at our best, is when we have that kind of tension. You don't want to be completely unresponsive. You don't want to have certain functions just completely fail. You know, I think Congress is at the point where it's failing when they're passing continuing resolutions instead of actually passing new budgets.
I completely agree.
You know, I think Congress has reached that point of failure. But no, here in Florida, like, we pass a balanced budget. We meet all of our constitutional requirements. We function appropriately. And we only happen to be in Tallahassee, the legislature, for about, you know, in session for 60 days a year. The rest of the time, we're not even, you know, in session as the legislature, or we shouldn't be, because we shouldn't be having all these special sessions constantly to kind of end run the constitutional process that we already have. I don't think that there's any kind of constitutional crisis here in Florida. This is how government's supposed to be operating.
I agree. Speaking of budgets, Danny Perez, Speaker of the House, a good friend of yours, advocated this week for a budget which is actually lower than last year's. That's kind of a novel concept in government. He also is advocating for a reduction in the state component of sales tax from 6% down to 5.25%, something that he says would reduce state income or revenue. We sometimes euphemize it as saying that state revenue go down by about $5 billion. But, of course, we're cutting spending, too. So this is, I mean, a major shift for the state is, I mean, are they serious? You know, this is like a weird, I mean, I'm glad to see it, but is this a serious thing?
Oh, no, we're dead serious. This would be the first time that we've had such a significant cut in taxes. You know, this would be the first time we've actually cut our spending without being forced to. Like, we had to have cuts in spending during the Great Recession as a Florida legislature. Obviously, I wasn't here, but like back in, I guess, 2009, 2010, because of a lack of revenue. This would be the first time that I'm aware of in history where we'd be actually cutting our budget so significantly and also cutting our spending. I mean, and also cutting our tax revenue. But I think it's merited, and there's one criticism that people keep saying. It's like, why are we going to cut taxes for tourists? But 365 days of the year, I live here in Florida and you live here in Florida. I would say on any given day, less than 20% of all sales tax is paid by tourists. That means 80% of all sales tax that's paid every single day here in Florida is paid by a Florida resident. Tourists don't come here to buy cars. We buy cars here.
Right.
Tourists don't pay nearly as much for gas here in Florida as we do. We buy gas every single day here in Florida. This would be a huge savings for Floridians. I mean, $5 billion in savings divided by, what, $22 million people. I mean, that's a real savings for Floridians that we haven't seen in Florida's history.
And honestly, the part about it that I like particularly is that it's not the tax holiday for special items so that we can get political benefit by looking that we're giving you cheaper things for back to school or whatever. You know me, my philosophy is I hate all these tax holidays. I think they're silly. But the one thing I can at least praise this one for is probably not going to get many people go to buy a flat screen TV and think, well, thank God that Danny Perez gave me a tax cut. They just don't even notice. You know, they might notice that it's less, but they aren't going to think the same way about, you know, favoring politicians for giving them this. At least I don't view it that way. What about in your silo? Because you are over the largest silo of the budget dealing with healthcare stuff. What are you guys, what's been happening there? Have you found, you know, we talked last time you were looking for redundancies in positions. You were looking for people who were getting paid twice. You were trying to bring some accounting reform to have the books basically be reconciled in ways that they had not been done properly. Have you made any progress?
Yeah, so I presented my budget, my proposed budget this week. It represents a cut of about $1 billion in initial annual spending, and it also cuts one program that spends $50 million a year over the next 10 years. So that's a savings of $500 million over the next 10 years. We proposed cutting 3,500 positions from our healthcare agencies, so Department of Health, Agency for Healthcare Administration, DCF, Department of Children and Families, Agency for Persons with Disabilities, and Elder Affairs and Veterans Affairs. So we cut 3,500 positions, or proposed to cut that many positions.
Out of an overall number, what's the overall number we're looking at? 3,500 out of how many?
About 30,000. So about 10
or 11%. Okay, go on. Sorry.
And these are only positions that have been unfilled for 90 days or more.
Got it.
Some of these positions have been unfilled for several years. That represents a savings this year of about $150 million if the Senate agrees with our position. While I did not propose cutting any like rates for healthcare services, we didn't increase any rates for healthcare services either. We do have in Florida, because we're not a state that expanded our Medicaid program, our healthcare spend in Florida is lower than the majority of other states. So I just didn't think it was appropriate for us to be doing that, especially when we look nationally. We don't have a guide star to see exactly what would be good healthcare spend for a state our size that didn't also expand our Medicaid program.
Right.
So those proposals came through this week. It repealed some portions of the Live Healthy Act that was the Senate President's priority last year. The Senate President from last year, Senate President Pasadomo, she is still in the Florida Senate, even though she's no longer the Florida Senate President. So I can see the Senate maybe having an issue with that. But under the new president, we'll see if they want to negotiate on that or not.
Got it. Alex, as I know you are well aware, your former employer, the city of Milton, or particularly Heather Lindsay, has made comments implying that the budget, that the budget items, the three items that they were hoping to get from the state this year in Tallahassee, her perspective is that they were on track to be requested. And then she sort of woke up one day and discovered that neither Senator Gaetz nor Pat Maney in the House was going to be running any of those items. And there was an implication or a statement, really, that Maney, anyway, had been told that, you know, to get rid of them. Senator Gaetz said no such thing. But, you know, the implication was that somebody killed these bills. And I think the implication was that it was you. That's what I think is the implication. Obviously, with not having Joel Rudman in the seat, there's nobody to advocate directly for the geography that is not your responsibility. It would be unethical for you to run bills when you were employed by the city. But can you just, I don't know, address the issue. Did you have anything to do with killing, thwarting, ending, punishing the city of Milton or these three funding requests?
Nope. No. I think one key issue that the mayor keeps glossing over is the fact that she never personally spoke to Don Gates, and apparently the lobbyists never spoke to Don Gates until the very last minute, the day they found out that the House wasn't going to be filing those appropriations for the city. So I think the bigger issue was the entitlement expectation that somebody cared about Milton and Tallahassee. And there was really no advocacy, apparently. And again, this is all stuff I'm finding out after the fact. No, I had nothing to do with these appropriations not being filed. But again, like, even if they're filed, that doesn't mean they're going to get funded. The city of Pensacola filed one appropriation this year for like a second fire boat just for American Magic. I don't think it's a year for the city of Pensacola to be getting a fire boat specifically for American Magic. So city of Milton's not the only city that's not going to get funding this year in the budget. There's hundreds of cities in Florida. Plenty of them are not going to be getting funding in the budget. I just hope at some point the city of Milton finds this new city council finds a new boogeyman to complain about.
We're just going to move on. Obviously, I have a lot to say. We even have a whole feature. There's another bill that's been in discussion. I think Channel 3, even just as we're talking, has been running a story about this. The customary use bill. I think of this as the Fort Walton Beach bill, but I know it's not really just that. We only have a couple of minutes. I know it's a complicated subject. It's a bill you're running. As I understand it, it's not actually a bill that you're into all that much. It's a little bit complicated for people. Can you do your best to explain the bill, where we're at, why you're running a bill that isn't even really your project?
Yeah. So Shane Abbott's a House member, Jay Trumbull is a senator. They represent the Walton County area. They both asked me to file it because Shane Abbott didn't have a bill slot for that repealer bill. Essentially, the question is, should county commissions be able to vote to declare portions of privately owned land as customary use for the public to be able to cross and park on and camp out on, or should a judge have to determine whether or not a parcel of land meets the definition of customary use? So the tension there is who should be making that decision, because it's a due process question and it's almost like a taking of land. I've always erred on the side of saying a judge should probably do that instead of, five partisan politically elected officials. But at the same time, litigation is pretty much over in Walton County. Most of those parcels have either settled with the county one way or the other, or had judicial determinations made about them. So at least as far as Walton County is concerned, I don't necessarily think the statute on the books the way it is needed. I think it's a misnomer and a misconception that anyone says this language carves out Walton County. It certainly doesn't. All you have to do is read the statute to understand that it has nothing directly to do with Walton County. By taking this back, it allows county commissions to essentially make that determination, and it would put the onus back on the property owners to take the county commission to court if they think the county commission took portions of their land inappropriately.
So it's which is ultimately a question of, like, what's been the habitual practice? Have these land rights been enforced and protected, or have they not? Has the public enjoyed a kind of customary use over time? I think sometimes it gets perceived as, and it would be or could be, a taking. But I think, some of the advocates of declaring customary use think of it as simply a recognition of what has always been the case. Of course, we've had conversations like this about, over like on Perdido Key, for example, here, and, a different issue, different laws, different property rights and all that. But it's that issue comes up of what the public is expected or has come to be expected as the customary use. And your basic point, I just want to make sure I get this, because I want to make sure people understand the issue, is that in Fort Walton, Fort Walton Beach, it's relatively mooted out now because most of it has been resolved. It has historically been a question for judges to decide whether customary use applies rather than politically elected leaders. The bill would make it so that the county commission could do it, and then the individual landowner could sue in order to get back from having to grant the customary use access. And even though you side with the traditional interpretation and not for this bill, you're still running the bill because somebody asked you to, which I think is a kind of, does that ever happen? First of all, do I have all that basically right?
Yeah. So, I mean, this isn't like a one issue where I'm so hard and fast on either side that I feel uncomfortable or like I'm violating some principle of mine to file it. But, you know, I think Walton County specifically, their issue is the county sold all of their beachfronts to the Minnehaha waterline 50 years ago, and then they wanted to take it back without buying public beach access. You know, I think that's more of a failing on the historical county commissions in Walton County, who didn't buy back public beach access after they'd sold it when they realized their beach was becoming popular. So, like, that really is the issue. I think if the county wants to take land, they have to pay for it. And I don't think that they should try and end run having to pay for land they want to take by, you know, kind of like dummying up a legal claim, like a legal statement of fact to declare land having a specific character instead of, you know, going through the process of buying back land that they want to own again.
Yeah, and I appreciate the issue. It's a very interesting issue, of course, and obviously as you know, beachfront properties here in Escambia and Santa Rosa County, we think about this kind of stuff all the time. I just think it's interesting that you're filing a bill because they didn't have any slots left. You only have so many bills you can file. They didn't have repealer slots left that they could file, and you're filing it on their behalf, even though it's not exactly your issue. I kind of like that, honestly, that way of working together. Alex Andrade, State Representative for District 2. Alex, as always, thank you for the time. I know you've been under the weather this week, and I hope you feel better. We'll talk to you again next week, sir.
Thanks, Andrew.